Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is
a little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto
friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is
that.
I needed something to wake me up there.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I'm trying.
Good morning, everybody. It's Tech Talk. That's Michael Tech Talk Kassler, the star of the show.
Oh, yes. Yes. And Dave.
If I had a better announcer, if I had a better voice, I'd be the announcer.
Oh, you're
or any
so
kind
much,
of voice at all?
You're so much more than that, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't let any of the hate mail that we get fool you. It's really...
Boy, wouldn't that be great if we got hate mail? Boy,
that would be fantastic. Mail. Yeah. You know why we don't get any mail? What? We've got no clout. We've got no clout, internet clout.
So how can we get clout?
Well, I don't know, but you know what? We're going to have Megan Berry, one of the top execs for clout.com, is going to be on the air here in just a little bit.
And quickly, what is clout?
She's going to tell me all about it. You know what? Clout is a rating of your internet impact, of the ability that you have to influence
your social influence
around the net, around the interwebs. Yeah, and I almost made it to 50. I was so excited. I wanted to be at 50 before the show.
Just what the egomaniacs in the world need is a gauge.
That's one of my questions.
It's an ego gauge.
How narcissistic is the desire for more clout?
And I don't mean anything against clout. I think it's great. I think it's great to have this function and this feature and this service, but. As you and I both know, you know, there's a bit of an ego farm around here. That's all they need.
Well, radio tends to attract high ego quotient.
I could see fist fights breaking out over arguments about clout ratings.
Yes, yes. Well, but you know what? Now it doesn't. It's kind of like the Guinness of internet influence. No longer do you have to sit out in the cold and say, "I know I've got more influence. I'm just convinced of it." And gosh darn it! Now you can point to a number and say, "Look, I've got 50. I've got 46.4 compared to your 45.9. I'm more cloutful."
Yeah, there's going to be trouble down the road. I can just see this.
Yes,
It's only a matter of time before the, you know, first clout-inspired homicide takes place.
Oh, no. Hopefully that won't happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of clout, and guys with lots of it, more than us anyways, Jay...
Oh, tons. Yeah, tons of clout.
Encyclopedia Garmonica is going to be on. That is new. That was from last week. You weren't here. No, wait, it was from the week we were not here. You weren't here one week. We had Scott Androshko, the director of IT for Round Lake Schools, and he came up with that, I think.
Fantastic.
Absolutely brilliant. So he is now a Jay Encyclopedia Garmonica. And he's got
Jay Garman is his real name.
Yes, and he's got some fantastic geek trivia for us, and he's going to talk to us about that. Now, I've told him though, one of these weeks I'm not going to let him do geek trivia because he came out with an absolute fantastic Thanksgiving blog post of the I think it was a top 10 things geeks giving things that us geeks should all be thankful for.
Yes.
Such
good.
As Jonathan Colton and Fringe and all this. So I'm excited to talk to him about that. That'll be some good stuff.
Good.
And outside of that, we've got the usual news, reviews.
The usual blah, blah, blah.
Cool sites of the week.
Yeah, cool sites of the week. Yeah. You can't miss that.
Yeah. And podcast.
That's always fantastic.
So stick around for that. You know what? This is totally non-tech related, but I just heard, I don't know if people else have heard this, but this is actually a breaking news story. tragic one is Andy Rooney passed away just about a couple hours ago, which is about a month after delivering his final show. I don't know if you saw that. I was actually lucky enough to catch that.
No, I tried to DVR it, and it was one of the late football game, you know, screwed up the schedule on the DVR, so I missed it. That's too bad. What a great broadcasting career. Started in World War II overseas, of course, for the Stars and Stripes. Amazing career.
Yeah. Yep. We'll be hearing a lot about him over the next couple of
days. And a lot of people made fun of his little bit and that sort of thing. But you know what? He made it look easy. Lots of people have tried to do that sort of thing, both on 60 Minutes and on 60 Minutes 2. They had that for a while. Other news magazine shows have tried to put that little comedic or insightful postscript at the end of the show, and nobody's been able to do it. Nobody's been able to do it. You know, they last a few weeks, maybe a season, but beyond. And he did it for 30 years.
Chicago's own Walter Jacobson. I mean,
Mike Royko used to call him Sparky, come to think of it, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, I know. Walter just died.
Yeah, but he's gone away and come back and had a few DUIs in between there.
So our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to Andy Rooney and his family and the impact that he has made on journalism.
Yeah.
So not being a journalist myself, I... we're occasionally, like I said,
we're the people that steal from journalists.
I think I've said this before. Is I barely feel competent to repeat the news, let alone report it. So, but there was on the tech front.
I suppose it's my job to dispute that, but
no, please. There's no need. Don't embarrass yourself trying to fling yourself in front of that.
I was just making excuses for not disputing it. That's what I was going to do.
There has been some pretty interesting news lately, though. On the iPhone front in particular, I don't know. Do you have friends with iPhones? Do you have friends?
Yeah, not the most recent, no.
No, well, they're lucky because apparently this new iOS 5 release has really done a number on the battery usage. A combination of Siri and some actual... in the code programming issue has caused the battery life to be just, you know,
I've heard about
garbage.
This, and I've also heard that there's big problems with Siri.
Siri was down. Yeah, okay. Siri was down and
All right, I don't know why I should be shy about this. I'm professing my ignorance on the radio. What the heck is Siri?
Okay, Siri is...
I was reading about the problems with Siri, and I was like, what is Siri? Some sort of personal assistant? Like a PDA kind of thing?
That's how they're kind of posing it. It's a voice activated anything voice, you know. But it's
what could go wrong?
It's up to the next level. You know, they've got one level up. It's Siri. It allows you to say something into the phone and get a response. You could say, and the commercials are brilliant. They're just beautiful. They show someone saying, "I'm locked, Siri. I'm locked out of my house."
Oh yeah.
And
of course
Siri says, "Here's some local locksmiths for you."
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the problem is I skip through commercials. I don't hardly ever watch them, but I did catch a glimpse of that.
So what it does is it combines a lot of technologies that are already existing.
Like GPS.
Takes voice reco.
Right.
It says, you know, what is the command? It searches for the command. It's like, you remember playing Zork back in the... text-based role-playing games? It's kind of like that. Instead of saying go north, go west, you can have different commands, and the commands are things like, you know, attack troll with X. You say navigate home. You know, I want to go home, and Siri is smart enough to interpret that and say, I pick out the word go, and I know that means to navigate home. I have that registered already in my GPS. Bang. Thank you. Here we go.
Bang. Thank you. Here we go.
I pulled that one up by the reins pretty quick. Siri is a lovely lady.
Yeah.
And
But so, see, but there've been it was down for hours or 20, you know, a long time.
What people may not realize about Siri, it feels so intimate and feels so connected to you and
your
phone in your pocket.
Yeah.
But it is in the cloud.
Yeah.
There are servers specifically.
Silvers?
She sells Siri's down by the seashore on the servers. No, there are servers dedicated to running the Siri back end, the applications, the voice reco, the interpretation of the commands.
That would have to
all
be.
All that is out in the cloud. Otherwise, it'd bring your
iPhone to its knees.
You can't put that in your pocket.
And
exactly.
Bang, thank you. Yeah.
Is that Siri in your pocket? Or you didn't know? Anyway.
Yeah.
Again. Oh, I hope no one from the FCC is listening.
No, we're within sensors guidelines.
So Siri's servers had some serious issues the last week here.
While it was selling seashells on the seesaw by the seashore.
and
silly goose, yeah.
And it brought Siri to its knees. It was down for a couple of weeks. The only response that Siri would give if you asked a question was, "I'm sorry, the network is down."
Yeah.
Now, poor Siri. Siri is back up and available to people now. Now, there's been a lot of...
Boy, Steve Jobs kicks the buckets.
Everything's going straight to hell.
You know,
look out! Free fall!
So people are equating, though, this battery issue combined with the Siri things to the antenna issue that happened before.
And I
do think that it, you know, there's a couple of things going on. I mean, the issue with Siri, too, is a little bit deeper even than just that it went down. People expect so much from Siri because of these commercials and because of the hype.
It's
not coming through, and it's not doing everything that everybody wants it to.
Oh, misleading advertising?
Gosh,
from
a major corporation, no less?
Yes. I didn't even know what Siri was. I didn't know what was, you know, I knew it was an Apple product, and I saw the voice rec and all that, and I was like, right away, I was like, that's not going to work. My expectations were totally contrary to people that are disappointed in this technology.
I've got on my iPhone, my Android phone that I prefer, I've got Vlingo, which does a similar set of
You prefer it because you've never done an iPhone.
And I have Iris, which is Siri spelled backwards. The interesting thing about that is that's an application that the developers made to replicate a lot of the core features of Siri, but again, did the same kind of thing, didn't create a lot of their own code, just created hooks into other code bases that already existed, like your GPS and your contacts. Took them about, they said, 8 to 10 hours in order to create this, and it works quite surprisingly well. So you can talk into it and get Google searches. You can talk into it and get navigated. And you don't have to yell at it? Don't have to enunciate. Exceptionally clearly.
Speaking of Google, are you done with this topic?
Sure, we're done.
No. We need to find a way to transition.
That's not okay.
Are you running out of gas?
Are you done talking yet?
No, are you out of gas on this topic? I never know when to step on you and when not to.
No, it's good.
I usually step on you too soon. But speaking of voice rec and Google, they're coming up with a, I don't know if it's Google or who's coming up with a voice rec TV.
That sounds like Google.
I think it is Google. No, Apple is actually.
Apple, okay.
Apple's
so
coming up with a voice rec TV.
All right.
But Google in Kansas City, Missouri, that's where they're launching their 1 gigabit per second network.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah.
That's cool stuff.
Were you like me? Did you like, look, where's my suitcase?
Yeah, exactly.
Where's my suit? You know, I could live there. I can find something to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
A gig per second. I mean, you know, talk about, you know, you couldn't, how many hard drives would you need? You'd like order like 3 terabyte drives by dozen.
Yeah. Well, if you could get them now with all of the floods in Thailand and so on, the hard drive market is rather
bleak.
Depressed. It's not looking good right now.
Yeah, well, it's driving up the prices a little bit.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's another issue too. It's actually it's too late almost for me to be reporting on it because it
it's not that old. It's about a week and a half old. Yeah,
but it's already too late to stock up. You talk to the guys at CDW and places like that. They're holding them. They're not dumping them out. They're almost completely gone. The hard drives that support the major manufacturers' equipment.
I haven't read about this in depth, but I would guess that it might maybe the closer you get to Christmas, prices might actually go up a little bit on laptops and stuff because of the hard drive shortage.
Oh yeah, wouldn't be surprised at all. Hey, you know what? We got to call Jay because we got stuff going on here today.
Let's do that.
Let's see if we can get through to him. And we got a good geek trivia question from last week too. It was a good Halloween themed one.
Oh, cool.
So did you do anything fun and exciting for Halloween?
I don't think I did. I avoided. I kept the lights out. Hid behind the couch, so I didn't have to give out any candy.
Okay, what am I walking on here?
good morning.
Mr. Garmin, welcome.
Dave was telling us about his exciting Halloween. Yeah.
Jay, you must have done something exciting for Halloween.
I have a four-year-old daughter. What makes you think I did anything for Halloween?
You went for a walk anyway.
Princesses.
yes, I did. We had some of our friends over, and the kids did the whole group trick-or-treating thing, and it was really cute. But it's funny to watch them as they tire out by age. You know, the 18-month-old just gives up first, and then the 2-year-old, and the 3-year-old, and my 4 almost 5-year-old stuck it out. Like, she was last man standing, and she was proud of it.
Yeah, we had one child. We've got 3 kids. We had one that just didn't want to do it this year already. He just didn't want to go out, wasn't excited about it. But, you know, once you get a couple of free pieces of candy, it's tough to all of a sudden it becomes.
It's a great economics lesson, like how much effort am I going to put in for what reward?
Yeah,
they start doing this sort of unconscious maximizing utility calculation in their head, like, oh, I don't know, that's a lot of Snickers.
Yeah.
Just
well, and then my older son, of course, he's trying to maximize. He knows we're out there for only a certain amount of time, so he's like, okay, well, I'm going to run ahead. I'll meet you at the next corner over, and when I'm walking with him, he's like, oh, you know what? No, we're not going to go to that house. That guy always gives terrible candy. You know, he's not worth it. It's not worth it. Keep going, Dad.
Oh, yes, the dreaded Swedish fish house.
Yeah. No one goes to that. Exactly. He was trying to figure out how to go back twice to the house that was giving out entire candy bars. There was one house on our block was giving out, like, actual regular sized candy bars.
Oh boy.
And he was like, oh, yeah, we gotta go back. How can I go? Maybe I can flip my cape inside out. Nobody'll know.
Yeah, I don't know why they call those little ones fun size, you know. What's fun about
them? They're fun to throw them at people.
Yeah.
That's about
And candy corn, who wants candy corn? Nobody.
You know. Oh, I don't know.
You like candy corn?
I like candy corn.
Jelly Belly, I guess, makes candy corn.
Oh, do
they? I've never had it. I bet it's better than your round-of-mill candy corn.
I don't like the flavored stuff, the unique things, the chocolate candy corn, all that.
I think we're digressing.
I want my candy corn straight up. No, nothing weird about it.
So, hi, Jay.
Jay, you know what? We have to actually try and keep a little bit on time today. You know, I'm going to have somebody on. You might even be interested about this, interested enough about this show that you'll actually go back and listen to the interview later.
Nah.
Probably not. But we're going to have an executive from Clout is going to be on in just a little bit and talking about why I can't get my Clout score over 50 no matter what I do.
That's interesting. They just got dinged around in Europe, by the way. You may not want to bring this up with him, but they apparently did not allow you to opt out at all, which is sort of a, how do I put this, gross violation of European privacy law.
Huh.
So they just had to update their application to let you opt out.
Opt out how? I mean, they just forced everyone on the internet.
If you resigned your account, they kept tracking you.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. I thought it was like the Austrian, organ donation rule where you're opted in unless you specifically write and say I don't want to donate my organs. Which I honestly I think that's a good thing, but not for clout.
No, clout cannot have my organs. No. I'm going to put that on record right now. My kidneys are spoken for, and if somebody wants them, they're going to have to go through the American Tissue Bank.
That's right.
Yeah. It's an interesting combination of words on the show today. You know, clout, organs, you know.
We do go to some strange places on this show sometimes.
So I can't wait to hear... I can't wait to hear the answer of the trivia question, actually.
Last week, the question was, what manned spaceflight was the only one that was launched on Halloween Day?
Ah.
It was a good Halloween question.
Yeah, and, pilots are somewhat superstitious and traditional, so it's surprising that they would launch anything on Halloween. To my knowledge, none has ever launched on a Friday the 13th, so they haven't gotten that far. But the only manned spaceflight to ever launch on Halloween was one of the most important space flights in history. It was Expedition 1 to the International Space Station. It began what has been uninterrupted occupation of the ISS. It was launched on Halloween Day in the year 2000. And the guys that went up, the three astronauts, an American and two Soviet cosmonauts, who went up in the Soyuz capsule, were there for 4.5 months. They were there for Halloween, Thanksgiving, New Year's, Valentine's Day, and they left the day after St. Patrick's Day. It was unreal, and they set, I mean, talk about not being superstitious, they set, like, a whole host of records for the ISS and manned spaceflight. They had, during this mission, they had the longest spacewalk, because basically they put the solar panels on the space station while they were up there. They put the second research module, Destiny, on while they're up there. Basically, they finished building it over this 4.5 months. It was the most important mission in ISS history, and it launched on Halloween. They get to spend Christmas up there. They did the whole nine yards. And what's really interesting is 2 days after this mission got back, they burned up Mir. It's like, okay, you guys approved ISS works. We can trash the old one now. So this is literally probably the most important space station mission ever, and it launched on Halloween.
Very cool.
Did they dress up like spacemen, or were they more creative?
Cast. So, Jay, I'd be interested in your thoughts. What do you think about this thing where they isolated people for 526 days for prep for the Mars mission? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a good idea. If nothing else, to
not
to
for their wives.
From, no, well, and there's actually, it's funny because they talk about this in this mission we just discussed. There's what's known in spaceflight as the 3 month wall. After about 90 days in space, you start to get a little kooky, and you've got to basically, there's like people who can get past that 3 month wall, and there's people who can't. And you got to figure that out before you put. But there's really like no way to do that other than put them in space for 3 months, and then you just kind of got to figure it out. So I think it's important that they are isolating people like that to see if they can handle just the isolation for that long. Because there's a whole bunch of other things that go on with space flight that are going to screw you up besides the isolation, like cramped quarters and like privacy and the fact that basically something the thickness of tinfoil is separating you from explosive decompression and all that kind of thing. You know, it's really, really hard.
There's a little pressure, yeah.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Well, and I've heard, of course, the stories about where they've actually strapped people to beds, basically, for some set amount of time to determine, how they will do in low-gravity environments by tipping the bed slightly at like a 25-degree angle backwards so that the blood is somewhat drifting towards your head.
Yeah.
And, and people don't like that.
No.
After a while, it gets a little tough to operate. Yeah. So what should we be thinking? And I did get actually, I don't know if I got, people who want to answer the trivia questions should be going to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. I am much, much more consistent about putting the geek trivia up every week there than I ever have been on the main Tech Talk website. So I'd love to see some guesses and hits on there. I didn't see any for this one. I did for last week's, which was interesting, and got some good responses. But what should people be going there to respond to this week?
Well, we are approaching the anniversary of the date in 1943 that plutonium was synthesized in enough quantity you could actually see it with the naked eye, which is the first time we'd ever synthesized any element that didn't occur significantly in nature enough that you could actually see it without, you know, electron microscope, basically. So we're going to do a plutonium-based question because those are fun. Also, it's nice. We're also coming up with the date, 1955, that Doc Brown discovered the flux capacitor, so it's also timely there as well. Plutonium was actually discovered by Glenn Seaborg, who was probably the greatest particle chemist or nuclear chemist of all time. And he was credited with the discovery in 1940. He got to name it the whole nine yards, except that he was the second person to have been credited with the discovery of element 94. And the first person thought he discovered it in 1934, and it wasn't until we figured out fission that this historically extremely famous and successful scientist was proven wrong. So basically, we had to invent fission to figure out one of the smartest guys in history had screwed up. So who was the guy who first thought he discovered element 94, which we now call plutonium, and this guy called it something else, too.
Excellent. You know what? My son would love this question. I'm going to have to present this one to him. He's been challenged him because I had the first 15 elements memorized in order, and so he's been trying to get beyond that. And he's actually up to like 35 or 40 that he can recite now. So he's all into the table of the elements.
Wow, and, very cool.
Yeah, well, he's 9 years old, so he's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna have to throw this one at him, get him started to thinking about the history of the elements and not just the letters. Well, Jay, as always, thank you so much. I would bring us to an abrupt halt and move on to our spots and everything else, and then bring on Megan Berry from Cloud. But as always, thank you very much. And of course, people who are looking for more Jay can always find it at jgarman.net.
Okay. Thanks, fellas. You guys have a good weekend, and here's hoping your cloud score goes up.
Yeah, yeah. You too. You too, buddy.
Jay, I don't think Jay has any problem with his cloud score.
he's probably...
Mine's in the 50s, too. So I'm
oh, that can't be right. Yeah. That can't be right. No, but yours is above 50, right?
And mine's not above 50 right, yet. I've been struggling. Yeah. I just can't get it up above 50. So,
Dave, stop right there. You guys have a good weekend, and Dave, don't let him do any double entendres beyond that.
Oh, that's been nothing but that today.
All right.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
Great job as usual. What a guy.
Absolutely.
Only in the 50s, man. If anybody should have like a astronomical cloud score, it should be Jay Garman.
I'm telling you, I don't know. That's why we got to ask Megan. Hey, we're going to be back in about a minute and a half. We got some important information and sponsors and spots to play for you. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. We're going to have Megan Berry from Cloud on in just a minute.
Can't wait. You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
Snap Fitness Clubs of Round Lake are committed to providing a positive, clean, and safe environment for their health fitness members. Both Round Lake facilities offer 24-hour access 7 days per week. The phone number is 847-740-SNAP. The website is roundlakeill@snapfitness.com. Snap Fitness offers two Round Lake locations, one on Route 120 just east of Cedar Lake Road, and the second at Wilson Road by the Valley Lakes Water Tower.
The Round Lake Area Park District is a proud sponsor of WRLR. The mission of the Round Lake Area Park District is to promote healthy lifestyles through recreation programs, facilities, and open space. The Round Lake Area Park District is located in the Robert W. Rowlett Community Center at 814 Hart Road in Round Lake and is open Monday through Saturday. The phone number is 847-546-8558. The website is www.rlapd.org.
Hi, everybody. Listen to The Myths, hosted by me, Tony Young, on Mondays from 4 to 5 in the afternoon. That's on WRLR 98.3 LPFM. Anything goes on The Myths.
All right.
Caged the elephant. I love it.
We're back. We're
there
back.
Ain't no rest for the wicked, and it's so appropriate.
Let's do this thing. I feel terrible. I told Megan, I said 10:25. No later than 10:25.
I don't know where you got that number from.
I know. I always think I'm going to be on time, you know, and nailing it just right on the nose.
Yeah. So now she's not going to answer. She doesn't like us anymore.
Hey, this is Megan.
Oh, hi,
she
Megan.
She didn't answer. Thank you. we were just expressing our embarrassment at not ever being able to hit our time on time. I had told you.
No worries.
10:25. Thank you, Megan Berry from Clout. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been complaining that I can't get my Clout score above 50, but maybe you can do a better job than I at explaining what Clout is and what is a Clout score?
So we measure influence online, and we give people a Clout score that indicates their influence from 1 to 100. Basically, with the way our scores are now, the average score is around 20. So to give you an idea, getting above 50 is very high, because if you're above 50, you're actually in the 95th percentile.
Oh, wow.
So that may help right there.
wow.
But what we do is we look at 13 social networks and always adding more in order to understand not how much you talk, but actually your ability to drive action online. Mm-hmm. So if I talk about, some new technology I'm looking into, how many people are sharing that message, responding to it, and engaging with it?
So it's not about, the amount of output. It really is attempting to measure signal to noise and doing that by taking the response that people have to that output. I mean, you actually look at, this person liked my Facebook post and I've got, 4% of my tweets wind up getting retweeted, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, we actually analyze 3 billion signals a day in order to understand not just every piece of content you're putting out, but every person who's responding to it, and actually every connection between you and your network.
And I kept thinking, if I just tweet more about Clout, I'll just, you guys would have to give me more Clout, and it didn't work.
well, we are so interesting to talk about. Sometimes people will respond more to you when you talk about Clout.
There you go. That's
true. That is probably very true.
And Michael, on the break, Michael was trying to figure out a way to game the system, if there was some way to bribe you or maybe take your kids to school to get a higher score.
Yeah. I'm so close.
I definitely accept bribes.
Fantastic. I am so close to 50, and I just can't quite make it there. Obviously, I know that you guys didn't set up the system so that it could be gamed. But are there things that people can do to... Before we start talking about whether or not your Clout score is important, are there ways that people can kind of naturally enhance their Clout score? If there's somebody who, not to name any names here, but if there's people that like myself that are interested, let's see this as a nice ego rub and
Megan, he's desperate for this. give him a tip. This is very important to him.
All right. Well, there's a few basic things I can definitely share. So one is make sure you've connected all your social networks. Obviously, we can only give you credit for influence we can measure. So if you make sure you've connected, if you're using Flickr, YouTube, LinkedIn, any service you're using, connect it to Clout, and that will generally help if you're influential on that network. And then the other thing is, on a higher level, it's about creating great content that people want to respond and engage with. So, what we generally recommend is when you look at...
That's my problem.
Look at your messages.
That sounds like
look
work.
Look at your messages and see what people are engaging with, and then create more messages like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, does this then, and that kind of begs the question, does that then set up this sort of, refractive response where you wind up, and maybe some people are going to be more concerned about responding to things that other people respond to and creating things that people respond to than they are going to worry about actually creating legitimate content or creating content that's valuable? You know,
I mean, in the long run, what we see is that people who are creating valuable content are the ones rising. Certainly in the short term, maybe if you post, you know, maybe if you want to raise your cult score tomorrow, post a really funny lolcat. And that might help, but it only helps for one day. And eventually, if you're the guy who just posts lolcats, like, you're not going to get, you're going to get a very niche audience that's into that, and you're not going to get the majority you need to grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's another interesting thing that Clout does is, you know, people focus a lot on the number, you know, the raw number. It's like, okay, I'm like, you know, I think I'm 47 or 48 right now. Fantastic. That's great. You know, I'm in the top 20% or something. But another thing that Clout does is you guys have, you just introduced topics, but what I think is even, or at least as interesting is you've got a grid that kind of shows where and how and what kind of an influencer you are. Could you talk about that for just a second?
Yeah, absolutely. So we believe, you know, like you say, it's not just about the score. It's also about things like your influence style. Do you tend to share more links, or do you tend to publish your own content? Are you consistently sort of at messaging and networking with people, or are you more about, you know, getting a sort of publishing in that sense? So that grid basically goes anywhere from celebrity to curator, to networker, to, you know, an observer who's very new to Twitter. And that sort of gives you an idea of your influence style. And then the second thing you mentioned is topics, which of course is very interesting along with that, to know that someone has, you know, a score of 45 and is influential on, you know, branding or technology, and is a networker. Suddenly you start to get a picture of what they might be like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a question I had, was how are the topics being garnered? Because right now my topics that I'm supposedly influential in are iOS, which is the Apple's operating system, and food.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see it. I mean, I understand how that would be associated to me, but I'm not sure how Clout figured that out, or if there aren't other things that I would say that I would hope to be more influential on than those.
Definitely. So what we do is we semantically analyze the content that gets the most engagement and response. So, you know, if when you post something, and we all know there's certain posts of ours that people just like more, and they're retweeted, or they're commented. Lots of comments on Facebook, you know, whatever platform that is, people engage with it a lot. Then we, you know, and analyze that content to find what higher level topic it refers to, and that then adds to your influential topic. That being said, you know, obviously that's sort of what we consider the first layer of topics, and the second layer is actually allowing the user to curate them. So you can go in there, you can give Clout, so plus K someone in a topic,
mm-hmm.
And that indicates that you've been influenced by them in that topic, and it surfaces that topic in their profile. You can also remove topics for yourself that aren't legit, and you can also, starting next week, add topics if you get other people to vouch for them.
Ah, okay. That's what I was looking for. Is I want to Clout myself, man. I definitely think that there's some topics that I feel that I'm influential on that are not represented by those topics yet, and that would be a good way to be able to introduce those and get a sense for if I'm right, I guess, or not.
Exactly.
So that's pretty cool. Now, you know, there's been a lot of, and we've been talking a lot about the way that Clout kind of figures things out. I got to bring it up. There was recently a pretty big hubbaloo in the news because Clout changed their algorithm after being around for what, all of 6 months. You know, you guys have made the horrible mistake of changing everybody's Clout scores, and of course some of the I think the and, you know, I'm stepping out a little bit here, but of course the problem was you've defined who's influential. You've got these influential people. You've said, hey, you're very influential, and I know that you have a lot of reach and a lot of impact on people, and now I'm going to bring your clout score down. And so those people with the most influence were the ones that were the most vocal and had the most impact on others. So this turned into kind of a storm of news about how clout had changed their algorithm. What happened with that? And I mean, do you guys do you think that was a good decision? And are you standing by the choices that you made with that?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a few parts to that. One is just in terms of like the algorithm change itself. There's a few key improvements. And towards your point, the reason sort of there was a big to-do about it is that it did impact a lot of people in the top echelon of scores, and obviously those are the most vocal people. Mm-hmm. And actually my score also went down 11 points.
Oh my goodness.
So I understand what it's about. And the main thing is, and it's a criticism we've gotten before from actually the same people, ironically, but what we are taking into account now that we weren't before is looking at, you know, any actions from your audience in the context of the person giving it to them. So what that means is if I go on Facebook and I like every single status update, mm-hmm. we shouldn't consider my like a very good signal of influence because I do it all the time, mm-hmm. right? Whereas if I only give one like a week and I choose to do it on your post, that actually means something. So we've added in that layer to our algorithm, and what that means is, for instance, with me, I'm very active on social media, and I tend to interact with a lot of other people who are very active on social media, and that's true of many of the people in the top clout scores. And so, given that, they were impacted by that change. That being said, as I look at it overall, I do think it's more accurate. What's easier for me to do, perhaps, than an outsider, is I know the absolute score isn't as important as how you are in context with your peers and mm-hmm. friends. And so when I look at myself in context, it makes sense to me. Like, honestly, my score used to be higher than our CEO, who's definitely more influential than me. And now the reverse is true. So that's definitely, I think it's a great change for us. You know, that's one improvement. Another improvement is we've gotten smarter at how we score networks so that they're all considered equal. So influence on every network means the same, given it's the same amount of influence happening.
Yep.
Hey. And in terms of communication, the people got upset about it. I think, you know, we have some takeaways internally about how we could probably communicate better, for sure. But we are starting to see things kind of calm down and people move on, so that's great.
Yep. And I personally, from my viewpoint, I think that the changes were reasonable and fair also. I think it did make more sense what I saw of the changes that occurred. You know, what you brought up, though, an interesting thing that I wanted to ask about is, so you mentioned this this difference in score between yourself and your CEO, for example. And I guess that was a question that I had was, does the clout score, or how does the clout score translate into real world influence? I mean, you know, we talk about, yes, okay, I've got a great influence on, you know, Facebook. Okay, fantastic. That's just great. Everybody likes the photos I post of my kids during Halloween. Wonderful. That really doesn't help me, though, if, you know, I'm looking for a job or if I'm trying to network with someone to make that big sale. Does clout translate into that type of a real world networking environment, or is it really kind of just limited to your impact on the social network?
You know, I think obviously we can't fully measure offline influence. We've thought about maybe we can try to do that in the future. It's not currently in our goal set, mm-hmm. but we do see very, very interesting correlations there in terms of if someone is very influential, especially if we add more networks, you get LinkedIn in there. When we added that network probably about 6 months ago, that really brought us a longer step towards that offline influence because suddenly that CEO and his network starts to look very impressive. So we're not perfect. There's certainly exceptions. Real world power often involves how much money is in your bank account. And we explicitly don't want to measure that because, we're about something new. We're about your ability to create great content to engage people. And we think that's very meaningful, even if you don't have lots of money in the bank.
So you're not going to let people, plus one their Mint scores and, I guess, you know, that's another thing to talk about. You know, you've got some hooks in, obviously, LinkedIn, YouTube, you mentioned Facebook, Twitter, the WordPress engines, and things like that. But there are some gaps, and there's some definite things that seem to be missing where people do have influence, but they're not being tracked right now. Just a couple off the top of my head that come up are Amazon reviews. I know a lot of people are extremely active in that arena and have a lot of a positive interaction there. And also, too, of course, things that are off the grid a bit. You know, like I've got my own website, podcast channel where people can comment and do things and all that. Are you looking at, or is Clout looking at, continuing to expand those API connections, continuing to, you know, increase the reach? Is there anything coming up soon that would be of interest to people?
So, yes, absolutely. We're looking, like, we want to measure influence everywhere people are creating content online. So that includes, you know, eventually, you know, all, you know, websites, reviews, all those things. It's dependent, of course, on, you know, us being able to get that data. So we have to partner with Amazon and allow them get an API for that data. And similar for websites, the difficulty is making sure we track that. And we can't just have you like type in what your website is, because then I'm going to be like, oh, I own google.com. but you know, these are solvable things that we're working on. In terms of stuff that's coming up in the near future, I think what right now, you know, because of this huge change right now, what we're actually doing is, we're going back and actively scoring some of the networks that we allowed you to connect to. So, next week, probably next week, we're going to score Google Plus. So there's some of these networks that we've allowed you to connect to, but we haven't fully integrated into scoring. So we're going to catch up with all of those. And then going forward, you know, probably more blog engines, more social media that's popping up, you know, something like, it's not officially on our roadmap yet, but something that might, you know, be a good example is like Pinterest.
Hello?
Are
you still there?
Yep.
Sorry. I thought we lost you. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool because, yeah, like I said, I think there's a lot of area there for that to kind of grow and start being a more. I mean, obviously, the ideal or the goal would be to have a truly representative picture of person's influence, and then to use that. Now, one of the things I wanted to get to with my earlier question about the real world influence is I've heard some crazy stories about employers using the Clout score as one of the things that they want to know about a potential employee before they're even willing to interview them or hire them. Have you heard about this? Is this a real thing?
So we've definitely started to hear about it, and also people putting Clout scores on resumes. You know, we'd like to get to the point where it makes sense in many fields, but right now where it really makes sense is if you're applying for a job in marketing or social media, and you have no presence online and you're failing at that, that's something I'm going to take into account as an employer. Mm-hmm. Like, why should I believe you can market my company if you can't market yourself? You know, obviously the score is not the end all be all. It's one factor of many. We actually think of it kind of similar. You know, for that position, it's similar actually to an SAT score for college. It's not everything, but it's something to look at.
And now we just need to have people cramming for their Clout Exist.
Well, you're ahead of the curve now.
I can see that, and particularly in those fields, I think you're absolutely right. This is a pretty nice, condensed, and objective way, in somewhat objective way, to evaluate potential employees for those positions. As you know, instead of having to have all of this research done on, well, you know, they're on Twitter and you know they seem to have a lot of followers, but you know that really doesn't mean that much necessarily. And all these things up and down. Having that clout score, you've done the legwork. You've done the evaluative steps and said, hey, this is someone who really does have presence already and really does have an understanding of how to make an impact on the internet. So I think that's cool stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Megan, I'm going to have to pull us to a close. I apologize. I think we could go on for another while here. where can people find more information if they're interested?
So we're at clout.com, clout.com, and you can go check it out, find out your clout score, and let us know.
And how much does it cost to sign up?
Free.
Yeah, it's free. I love free stuff. So,
so are there tips on your site for how to increase your clout score, similar to the stuff you shared with us?
There's some stuff on our blog for sure, and you can check it out. Increasingly, going forward, we're going to be adding more tips specific to you. So that's a cool feature that's coming up. Looking at your activity and audience, here are a couple things you could do to increase your score.
That's great.
And we didn't even scratch on the whole topic of perks. I'm going to let people find that out for themselves. But if you do some cool stuff with your clout score, you can actually get some pretty neat perks too, which is free stuff that companies are willing to give you because of your influence. Well, Megan, I got to bring us to a close. I'm so sorry. Thank you so much for your time, though. It was fantastic. Just a great bit of information. And I'm sure people are going to be checking out Clout after listening to us today.
Thank you, Megan.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Good job.
You too. Bye.
Megan,
she
Barry,
sounds so young.
Clout. Everybody sounds young to me these days. It's tough to me.
You sound young to me.
Oh man, it's that extra treble I got on the board here. Man, but before we forget,
is it time?
It is. I got to do this really fast. So one, of course, cool site of the week you're going to see on there is going to be clout.com, clout.com. I think they might have been a cool site of the week at some point. I got another couple of them, though, that are pretty neat. I've been traveling more because of my new day gig that I do. I'm working with NEC, NECAM, NEC Corporation of America, and part of my job is to go and visit customers and potential customers and talk about technology. So it's a fun thing. Because of that, though, now I've got all of these different mileage cards and bonus cards and hotel cards and car cards. And oh my gosh, it's overwhelming. Now I love TripIt.com. That helps me make sure that I've got the right place. But if you're looking for a single location in order to store all of your frequent flyer points and kind of figure out where you're at with the different rewards programs, United Airlines, Delta, whatever, GoMiles.com, www.GoMiles.com. brings them all together.
That sounds great.
It's pretty cool stuff. Yeah. Actually, it's very nice, very well done. They're extremely responsive. I had an issue early on with one of my cards not registering properly. Bang, responded right back to me within a couple of hours, I think, of me sending them an email asking them to resolve the issue. So for a free service, it's pretty fantastic. I would take a look at it for sure. GoMiles.com. Check that out. I got one more for you, too, at least here. And it's been how much time we got, at least one more. This is really neat. I love talking about Excel. I love working in Excel. I love doing stuff with Excel. I cannot get Excel 2010 on my work machine. So there's some things that are missing that I got used to in Excel 2010. So if your company is like that and they've standardized on 2007, one of the things that you may be missing out on is in 2010, they had this really neat graphing utility called Sparklines. Mm-hmm. Sparklines was basically a single cell graph. And it would take data and information, and you could make it into a little line graph or a pie chart, but just it would only take up the space of a single cell. It would automatically recalculate really neat stuff for making your information and your data understandable visually very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It almost has to be seen to be understood. It's kind of like pivot tables, though. Once you start using them, you're like, oh, my gosh, how did I ever live without this? This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Pivot tables, but Sparklines for Excel. Now, you can go to sparklines-excel.blogspot.com, and a guy there has spent the time and effort to actually recreate the Sparklines feature that exists in 2010, but made it available for 2003 and 2007 as well, macro-based XLAM files. It's great stuff. I'm going to put that as a cool site of the week as well, and I think, man, on that note, we're probably just going to have to switch right on over to the podcast.
That sounds fantastic.
So it's neat. I love Excel, and I just love doing things that nobody else sees or expects in Excel.
Right.
I like having that extra.
It's a shame I don't have 2010.
I know. I let me tell you, our corporate offices are in Texas. I must have burned probably $5 in long distance charges calling up everybody I could over there. You tell me I've got to be able to get 2010, and everybody's like, no.
Everybody's like, shut up.
It's because of Japan. Japan won't let us do it. And I'm like, let me talk to Japan. Put them on the line. Come on.
This is WRLR, Raleigh, Council, Illinois, by the way.
Yes, it is. I'm going to play, you know what, Dave, this is a song for Dave today.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to play the artist's Passion Pit, but the song is called Sleepyhead.
Oh,
Dave's
do I look that way? Yeah.
you look a little snoozy, Dave.
Yeah.
You look a little snoozy.
Yeah.
Again, shouts out to, of course, our regular Jay Garman, and what a fantastic talk with Megan Berry from Clout and Clout.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
We're so fortunate to have such good people on the show.
You know, every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting close to Thanksgiving. It's time to start saying those thanks.
Yeah.
Please come back next week. I can't remember if it's next week or the week after. We're going to have McAfee on here soon. We're going to have Swag, which is a mobile app for keeping your gift cards centralized. They're going to be on in a couple of weeks.
Great this time of year, yeah.
And I don't know for sure, but they tell me there's going to be a giveaway for that I'm going to have big stuff to give away for that Swag thing.
Easy.
That's just between you and me. Nobody else knows about it. All right, so this is it. Sleepyhead by Passion Pit. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you then.
Everything is going to the beat. And everything is going to the beat. And everything is going to the beat.